Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Skilled tradespeople, the welders, mechanics, electricians, and carpenters of the world are a hot commodity these days. More than half of American skilled workers are 45 or older, and the baby boom generation is retiring at a very fast clip. Meanwhile, fewer young people are interested in the trades. That means we have a shortage on the horizon. Coming up, we'll hear from a workforce development and education expert about the challenge. Joining us now is Eric Thorkelson. He is the CEO of the PBS Home Improvement Show, This Old House, which is helping turn the tide toward more enrollment in the skilled trades. Eric Thorkelson, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ann. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Why is this of interest to This Old House?
Oh, we're every bit as much a part of the industry and the issue as all the companies in the space are, as well as everyone who's a homeowner or expects to be a homeowner. You sort of laid it out perfectly in the intro there. There's literally millions of unfilled jobs in the skilled trades, and that is only going to worsen if we can't encourage more young people to consider those trades as a rewarding career. For us as a business, we rely very much on the interests of consumers and the activity of consumers with the homes, and we want to help.
You said people who are building homes, people who own a home, why it's important. Is that because as the shortage expands, as the gap expands, it becomes more expensive or just harder to get somebody to come to your home or what?
I think it's both of those things. Mm-hmm. It's going to be harder to get someone to show up, and on the simple end of things, to fix a leaky faucet, but on the bigger end of things, to help you with a major repair or renovation. But those that are still in the trades, their demand is going to increase, and therefore it'll be more expensive. So all around, we need to encourage more young people to consider the trades. And by the way, it will be good for them, not only good for everybody.
What can This Old House do to improve the odds for the skilled trades?
We're trying to do two major things. One that we think we do pretty well, which is bring awareness to it through our different platforms, through the public television series we have, the magazine that is built around that, as well as our digital properties. So we're trying to put a spotlight on both the issue as well as some of the young people who have already made the decision to consider the skilled trade. We've had them on our current season episodes, and in the season coming up in 2017, there'll be many more of them. So we hope that will make the prospect an exciting one and a compelling one. But then the other thing we're doing is we're reaching out to the industry partners that we have, the advertisers who also depend on skilled craftsmen to install and repair their products. And we're asking them to provide monies that can go into a scholarship fund that we've partnered with Mike Rowe and his foundation, Mike Rowe Works, to provide some support to the young people that are considering and want to pursue a career. Just last week at the Builder Show in Orlando, we gave Mike $500,000 check, which came from the initial round of donations that these generous partners have provided over the first several months of this initiative, and we expect to do a lot more in the months ahead.
I read an article that Mike Rowe wrote. Of course, he's the creator and the host of Dirty Jobs on television. And he wrote about how we're disconnected from the trades, that we don't know how things get fixed anymore because we're not helping somebody do it and we're not maybe not home when it's getting done. This sort of disconnection. I mean, a lot of people watch This Old House to reconnect a little bit, right?
We think so, and we like to think that we have some of the most skilled craftsmen that there are, and those guys have been inspiring to many people. But I think the disconnection that Mike speaks to even goes back to what's happening or is not happening, actually, in our secondary schools these days. And back in the day when I was in junior high school and high school, a shop class was a regular part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And you got exposed at that age to what was interesting about working with your hands and using tools and building something. But those programs in the last 15 to 20 years have virtually disappeared. So the younger people that are in school now at that level have no sense at all about what might be an alternative. And, you know, this is really, Anne, about another option. It's not about kind of a binary do this and not that. It's just making sure that the young people have a clear and well-understood case for another approach to how they might spend their life and build a career.
Right. You're saying it's not a zero-sum game. You could go to college and do a skilled trade or some combination of the two.
Yes. And even the skilled trades these days require some degree of education and training and apprenticeship. And that's where the foundation is coming in to help support them financially in that effort. But sure, there's many instances that I've heard from contractors and industry people over the years saying that some of their best workers are ones who went the four-year route, got into business in some form, didn't find it satisfying, and turned around and ended up in the skilled trades where they're quite happy and well rewarded. So it isn't one way or the other. It really can be both.
We're talking about the skilled trades this hour. My guest right now, Eric Thorkelson, he's CEO of the PBS Home Improvement Show, This Old House, which is working with the foundation Mike Rowe Works to fund scholarships for apprenticeships and for education in the trades. If you have a question or comment about that this hour, coming up, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Eric, it's easy to understand why this is important, but what can you tell us about why we've come to the point where we're at now? It used to be that skilled trades funded their own apprenticeships. They had a pretty strong infrastructure in place to move people through that career path.
Well, and many of them still do, Anne. Just coming from this builder show last week, I heard about a lot of them that still do this. But the need is kind of on the supply end of it to have a greater number of younger people that are willing to enter those programs, whether they're directly with manufacturers or trade associations, or whether they're through something like what we're doing with Mike Rowe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the benefit of what we're trying to do in the storytelling that This Old House does is to create a much broader, more impactful awareness with the young people directly, as well as with their parents and other loved ones that they would turn to for sort of guidance and career help. And I think we've been very sort of inspired by the response that we've heard from this consumer audience since we started this back in the fall, with people hearing the message, believing that it's a worthy one, and looking to take action on it. So I think that to your question, the real need here is we need a lot more in the way of interested young people to help fill the gap. You know, the data you described before of average age of contractors 45 and up, and boomers retiring at an early age, the math says that for every three that retire, only one is coming into the trades, and that's a ratio that really isn't sustainable. We need to increase the side of that's the one to better match what the need is going to be going forward.
One of the issues is that when I look at This Old House, or when I look at a lot of any of the construction programs, whether it's HGTV or whatever it might be, they don't look like me. And I'm sure there's lots of other people out there that agree with that they all tend to be white males.
Yes. Yeah, and that definitely is an issue. Certainly, that's true of This Old House for sure. But I think what you're going to see, and it'll be much more evident with media communications we have this year, is that we're putting a spotlight on a much wider array of demographics and backgrounds. If you look at, we just published our January, February issue, and there's profiles in there of 8 different young people who have taken this direction. And there is a broad array of sex and backgrounds and education and interests. And that's exactly what we're trying to communicate, that this is an opportunity for everybody.
Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. I was listening to the program, and I can't help but chime in. I own a restaurant group, and seeing the lag time and the development and the build-out of restaurants due to the shortage of people in the skilled trades is kind of, you know, it's of concern. But there's also a correlation, I think, with the skilled trades in the restaurant setting itself. I mean, people are, I think, a little hesitant or recalcitrant to get involved in pulling up their sleeves and getting to work. I also think the tougher stance on immigration is not helping the matter either. I think we used to have a lot of qualified people who wanted to work hard coming across the border. And I think finding a legal path to that might help. But sorry, that was a lot.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Chris. Appreciate your time. And Rod in Canton, you're on the air. Hi, Rod.
Hi. Oh, I enjoy your show all the time, man. It's great. And this is very important, the information we're getting today.
Thanks, Rod.
Yeah, I'm from Canton, Ohio here. And our neighborhood association works with a group called Project Rebuild. What they do is they get kids that have dropped out of high school, help them get their GED, and then teach them things like plumbing, electricity, and carpentry. And it's quite a success here, but they do have a hard time finding funding for it.
Okay.
But like I said, it's something that seems to be working quite well here in Canton, Ohio.
All right.
And that's all I have to say. So I want to thank you for all the information you give to Ohio.
Thank you, Rod. Appreciate it.
All right.
Eric Thorkelson, what are some of the different, avenues you're going down to reach the people you're interested in reaching?
Well, just as Rob was saying there, in addition to sort of the consumer focus that our media platforms have, mm-hmm. and acquainting the audience with the problem and the opportunities, and then also reaching out to our industry partners, the third thing we're doing, that's really coming from organizations like he just described, is that we're finding there's a whole much more hyper-local network of initiatives out there that either need financial support, or they need sort of tools, and either literally or figuratively tools to help them with their programs. They need to get connected to others who are in the space. They need to get connected with some of the trade associations that could help them. So we sort of see our role as kind of being in a hub of making those connections, and what we will be building here in the next several weeks following up on this is a sort of a digital way for all of these people to connect with one another, mm-hmm. and to connect with some of the people that on our team that can help them.
Is this also a way to grow your audience, even though not everybody who watches or reads This Old House is in the skilled trades themselves? It's enjoyable and they appreciate it. When you broaden that larger field of skilled trades people, is that something, I mean, does that go to what you do for a living?
I guess so, but it's not really our focus. Mm-hmm. We believe that if we're creating the right kind of experience for viewers and readers and digital users, that we'll do fine, mm-hmm. as in growing our audience. We just see this as an incredibly important issue that faces the industry overall, and it's quite, frankly, it's quite personal to us. Each of our guys that America has come to know on our show, they got into the business years ago, either through their dads who were encouraging them to do it, or through help like we're trying to provide. Mm-hmm. And So there's a pay it forward kind of aspect to what we're trying to do here that is something that we believe in both from a business point of view and from a personal point of view.
Well, Eric Thorkelson, thanks for joining us today to talk about it. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us. Enjoyed it.
Eric Thorkelson is the CEO of the PBS Home Improvement Show, This Old House. There's also a magazine. If you have a question or comment about our program going forward, 614-292-8513. We are talking about the skilled trades and the employment gap in the skilled trades. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. In 2014, a total of roughly 3 million jobs were available for electricians, plumbers, manufacturing workers, pipe fitters, mechanics, computer techs, and welders. Because baby boomers are retiring and more young adults are pursuing four-year college degrees, many of those well-paying jobs went unfilled. To fill that gap, Columbus City Schools started a program aimed at shepherding students to careers in the skilled trades. We just heard from the CEO of This Old House on PBS to talk about how that program is working to change the equation. Joining us now is workforce development and education professor at Ohio State University, Jim Pinchak. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also, Executive Director of Columbus City Schools Career and Technical Education Curriculum, Pegeen Cleary-Potts. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
When did the gap start to emerge as far as you're concerned, Pegeen?
It was brought to our attention by some of the local employers specifically 2 years ago. They came to the plate and asked what we were going to do to help them with their workforce shortage. Mm-hmm. And asked if we would be willing to create a pilot program where students could work in the industry 1 week and possibly go to school the next week.
Didn't these employers realize earlier than 2 years ago that there was a problem?
Well, the initial conversation when I became part of it was actually 2 years ago.
Okay.
It was Jim Negron of Cornucopia came to the plate. And I think the conversation has been out there for probably the past decade, but it took a leadership change in the district, as well as a group of industry leaders coming to the plate and asking if they could be part of an initiative to get more students involved and to be part of the trades industry.
What do we know about what happened to the trades industry training programs in Columbus City Schools before? Where'd they go?
So they never went anywhere. They were there. And in the past, there used to be four career centers. And approximately 10 years ago, it went down to two career centers, one being Fort Hays and the other one Columbus Downtown High School. So all of the trades were career center programs or pathways are now situated at Fort Hays Academic and Career Center.
Now they're all in just one location?
In one location. And as students were coming there, a lot of what we have realized is that some students do not want to leave their home school to change their whole academic focus the last junior 2 years of their high mm-hmm. school experience. So now we're actually looking at that and using data to see if there are possibilities of putting back career and technical programs in traditional neighborhood schools where students can have both choices. They can go to the career center or stay in their home school.
And the shrinkage from four career centers down to two and then one was a function of what?
So it went down to two, not one.
Okay,
not
I'm
one.
Sorry. Apologies. Okay, so from four to two, though, that's 50% cut.
Well, the actual schools were cut,
okay.
But it actually, the career centers were centrally located downtown, so students didn't have to spend as much time on the bus
okay.
to get to some of those programs. The programs were intact and actually have been pretty successful. The construction trades have always worked with company, you know, with Habitat of Humanity.
Uh-huh.
But I think in the last 2 years, we have been very specific in trying to realign the programs to meet the industry demand. So we are specifically working with parents, counselors, principals, trying to align their thought of what a great student or a great potential that trade would be to students, great paying jobs. And once you are in the industry, the companies are willing to pay for their college experience after. So we're just in the past, I think everyone was concentrating on a 4-year degree, and that meant success. What we're learning now is a lot of student debt comes with a 4-year degree, and this is a pathway in which students can earn a livable wage and receive college education.
Is it just about the debt, though? Because I thought, no matter what, if you're not engaged with what you're doing, just not having debt is not going to be enough.
Right. And data also supports that the millennials they like change. And with construction, it's constant change. Whether you're at OSU Medical Center working on that particular project, that project ends and you go to another. So it is answering to some of the millennial characteristics that we're seeing in that age group. It also offers a pathway to graduation. So we think with that, it's going to be a great help for the Career Center recruitment, where now in Ohio, you can actually graduate high school with an industry credential and a work needs exam of a combination score of 13. In the last year, we experienced about almost 18% boost in our numbers at the career centers, specifically 11% in the construction trade, and we just passed the levy, and I think that's very exciting. And if you're following the levy and what's happening, we were able to secure 16 additional allocations to put into the career centers, and 4 of them will be this next year.
Are you talking about instructors?
Okay. So that we can build the programs that are being successful and get more students in the pipeline to meet these industry needs.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the skilled trades, where they went to. They didn't go anywhere. The demand is just as high, but the number of people to fill those slots is very, very low. And we're talking with folks who are working to change that trajectory. Just heard from Peggy Cleary Potts. She's Executive Director of Columbus City Schools Career and Technical Education Curriculum. Also with us, Jim Pinchak. He's Workforce Development and Education Professor at OSU. Jim, we're talking about kind of two different things in a lot of people's minds. There's the industrial arts, the shop programs that we were familiar with from junior high and in high school as well, more familiar to a lot of baby boomers. But now the skilled trades is different, and what we're talking about in these kind of programs at Columbus City Schools is different than that, right?
Right. The traditional industrial arts programs were designed to explore, use tools, learn the basic concepts of work. The governor, Kasich, wants to increase that effort to have more programs at the middle school to go back and teach those things because, as we've already heard, if you don't learn those things from your family, you need to learn them somewhere. And so we're trying to get more exploratory programs, but we're also trying to make sure that students prepare directly for the workforce. So Peggy and Columbus City and the surrounding career centers are trying to make sure all their graduates have a certificate recognized by industry with their diploma and some college credit so they have a pathway to continue their education. We're still always dealing with this issue of family decisions and career decisions. And for so long, we pushed the traditional university as the only pathway to success. And often, if you failed in that route, if you failed in something else, then people would say, well, why don't you try the skilled trades?
As if it were a secondary option, not as cool as college.
Well said. And what we're looking for is first choice, not last chance. The one caller talked about that we do have special programs to bring kids in who have been disadvantaged and have lower reading levels, but it requires more work for us to bring them up to speed. I was in a construction program a couple weeks ago. You mentioned about seeing people that look like you. And there was a young lady in there who was African-American who knew about the job and wanted to get involved, but she didn't want to wear a hard hat. You know, she didn't want to wear the boots. And she said she didn't feel feminine. And the teacher sent away and got her a pink hard hat. And that made the difference to her, that she could be a woman and be in the construction trades and very proud of that pink hard hat.
Well, we know technically women can do it. There's no question about that. But it hasn't always been necessarily a welcoming atmosphere, according to some women. What about that? I mean, ultimately, you're still a minority, whether you're female or of color.
Well, obviously, as we increase the numbers, it becomes easier. It's easier to be one of three or four people in an educational program or a pathway, one of three or five or ten people in a local union that, you know, are seeing things and developing it. But yes, as the numbers increase, it becomes earlier. But in many cases, it's just a lack of basic knowledge and tool usage that the females do not understand. You know, righty-tighty, lefty-loosey. And we're talking about training people for the construction trades, but we also need to be great consumers of the stuff that we're doing.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you went through a college, if I talked to people who went through a traditional college prep program, I'd ask them what the Pythagorean theorem is. And they say A squared plus B squared equals C squared. And I say, fine. Now, where do you apply that? And they have no idea. If I talk to somebody in the construction industry, I said, do you know what a 3-4-5 right triangle is? And they said, yeah. If you measure out 3 feet one side, 4 feet, the other side has to be a multiple of five, or you don't have a square. So if you're having somebody install a new patio and you want to make sure that that's square, you need to be able to do a 3 and 4 and a 5 measurement to make sure that that's there. So somehow we've forgotten theory and practice, application. And that's a lot of what STEM's about, taking technology, integrating it with math and science. And as people have less experiences in their families, mm-hmm. we need to provide more experiences in school and in the communities.
Yeah. Peggy?
To double back on what Dr. Pinchuk just said, I think it's really important to note that Columbus City Schools last year wrote a grant to implement STEM in all of our middle schools in the career and technical world. Which gives the students hands-on applications just different. So they're doing project lead the way engineering, mm-hmm. pre-engineering, which is teaching some of the students handheld tool and also computer applications. So the other thing that I think that is I think really important is that we're working with all kinds of companies, including the union trades. And on January 26th, the union trades, in collaboration with the city of Columbus, are having an open house. And it started out as an open house for women in the trades, but we have opened it to anyone that is interested in the jobs that are available in union trades. So all of the union trades, Steve Lipser from the electrical trades, sheet metal, plumbing and pipe fitters will all be on campus from 5 to 7. They are going to be providing pizza
at
Fort Hays Career right. Center. Okay. So it's in conjunction with all of the union trades as well as the city of Columbus, and they are using our building. So if you do want to see what it looks like, please come out and see.
When I'm reading about the availability of apprenticeships and that kind of a thing, they're hard to get. I had a friend who worked for 6 months to try to get into construction apprenticeship, and she finally just gave up because they just no slots. So it's hard. It's still hard to get those.
So our kids have the advantage of having some of those leaders write as part of their career and technical
in their classrooms.
Programs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we're working with the actual unions to see what we can do to make sure that our curriculum is answering to the exact things that they're looking for their future apprentices.
The highest level work-based learning is apprenticeship. It's a model that's proven. It's approved by the federal government. You get credits. It's great. But there are other types of work-based learning experiences that we could bring in. Had the one caller talk about restaurants. We need to get students with experiences. It may be job shadowing for a day or two. It may be a short-term unpaid internship. It may be a co-op experience where they're actually working on a job. We need to explore different ways. And one of the things that people need is mentors. They need to be matched with people who are in the trades, who are experts, to give advice to young people. You know, when Ulysses fought the Iliad, he had his son being trained by a person to help him learn the role, and the person's name was Mentor. And we all need mentors. We've had mentors in our careers, Anne, and that makes a difference. And when you're a minority student, when you're a non-traditional student, trying to break into these systems, you need to have mentors.
Yeah, yeah. Email from Mike. I'm a younger, master's degree educated and skilled tradesperson who has owned his own business in the past. I left my business to work for a big company, largely because of the tax and legal complexity of running my own business. I was profitable, but the red tape was too much. I think this causes folks to avoid the trades or just causes folks to work under the table. Is anyone thinking about how to simplify the landscape for people looking to take the entrepreneurial leap? Now, to tag on to what Mike was saying, I know that lots of people who struggle to get jobs, you know, because of criminal backgrounds, that kind of thing, because of the box, are looking to start their own businesses. But what about that? How much business education is included in when we're talking about all of this? Jim Pinchak?
Well, it depends on the career, and that's why we're trying to give students lots of career information. In the corrections institutions in the state of Ohio, we have barbering programs because you can become a licensed barber and become an entrepreneur in this state if you have a record and you're a felon, as long as it's not a sexual offense or a major crime. So there are some professions where you can come in. I mean, you're never going to be able to work in a school on a construction site if you have certain types of backgrounds, and so you're not going to be able to follow that pathway. But there are other places that you can go. There's entrepreneurship. And as this old house tells us, a lot of people, we do bartering and trading. You know, somebody has a skill in this area, and that's how we survive. So, yes, we need a lot of entrepreneurs as well as we need the big organizations.
You know, Peggy, and you brought up how millennials like change. This email from Bob kind of has questions that. He says, I've been a handyman and a small contractor for 20 years. Now I try to pass down my knowledge to young people on job sites, but they honestly aren't much interested. Other old timers and I joke that if there's not an app for it, kids don't want to do it. The idea of spending years honing your craft is somewhat alien to them.
It's an interesting point of view, but what we have seen just as recent as last week, we instituted back this year where every eighth grade student has had the opportunity to come and visit the career centers as part of our career advising plan. And last week we held a high school open house and we had several students and their parents show up saying, could they do career center starting at ninth grade? So I think it's changing. And I, as we keep going forward and you have some of the big players saying how important this actual pathway is, that is creating some of that interest now. When students feel it's acceptable or their parents feel that the pathway is an acceptable way of making a living, I think that whole conversation will change.
So can they get in the ninth grade?
So currently, no. But we are looking at that.
Yeah.
It's something that we're actually trying to see if we could start a small pilot in the future looking towards that. And then trying to reinvent the senior year where students have the ability to work in the positions like Dr. Pinchak was saying. So I think our career advising plan has been instrumental in getting the message out to all middle school parents and students that career centers is a viable pathway that earns industry credentials as well as college credit while you're in high school.
We're talking about the skilled trades this hour and the gap between the demand for skilled trades people and the number of people going into the skilled trades. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. As skilled carpenters, plumbers, and electricians retire, too few workers have been trained to replace them. We're talking about training the next generation to fill the skills gap. Still with us, OSU Workforce Development and Education Professor Jim Pinchak, and also Columbus City Schools Career and Technical Education Executive Director Peggy Cleary Potts. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. osu.org. We have an email from Karen who gets at a good point. She says, what are your guest thoughts on introducing skilled trade to the urban impoverished communities as a platform for employment, as well as a method to improve urban housing by using the model of Habitat for Humanity? Do you think industry partners would embrace such a model? Do you have any suggestions on how to reintroduce this to high school students? Peggy, that's what you're doing right now, right?
Correct. So we're introducing urban youth into the trades, and we've done that specifically by taking it back to middle school and making sure that all students are aware of the pathways that exist in career and technical education and aligning them with a pathway into a field that will continue on, whether that is through post-secondary or a job with livable wages and benefits upon graduation.
You know, one of the things about getting the college degree after you've got the skilled trade under your belt and you're working on that is, particularly at a place like OSU, it's hard to fit something like an OSU education into your schedule if you're actually working in a skilled trade.
It is true, but the pathway is clear from high school to the two-year colleges. Our two-year colleges like Columbus State are very flexible for adults. We have a ways to go at Ohio State and other universities to realize that many of our students are non-traditional, that they're not.
Or would be if they could be.
They would be if they could be. And we need to open those doors and see what we can do to expand those.
So Columbus City Schools has two career technical centers, the Columbus Downtown High School and Fort Hays Career Center that serves juniors and seniors. What response have you received from local employers who collaborate with Columbus City Schools, Peggy?
Well, if we're specifically talking about the trades, we've had a group of original six employers that came to the plate.
That you spoke about earlier?
That we spoke about mm-hmm. earlier. And they are begging for us to make the opportunity available for all. It's a pilot that has worked, and we have had students both that were on the way to graduation traditionally, and we're going to have no problem graduating. But we actually had the first student go through the alternate pathway and graduate with an industry credential and a work keys exam score. And it was interesting. We had just ran into him. He was a senior last year where he was not able to pass one of his proficiency exams, which would have held him back without a high school diploma. When he pulled up in the work van next to me and said, "Miss Cleary, it's all paid off." He had gotten a raise. He had benefits. And he was working and a high school graduation because of that industry credential. So I truly believe this is a successful model, and we're working with all of the big companies as well as the union trades to try to help create a workforce of the future in that particular industry.
Did you call it a pilot before?
Mm-hmm.
When does it cease to be a pilot?
So we're looking at everything in Columbus, we tried to do it small and then replicate it the second year to make sure that we have the success, that it wasn't just an outlier year last year. And then next year, we will look at trying to make that into a pilot just for that actual cohort so that all students that are in the construction industry would have the ability to be part of.
The National Employment Labor Law Project put out a report that indicates that real wages for manufacturing workers have been declining. And I was wondering what effect have lower labor costs had on the skills gap? I mean, we know that there are lots of really more than anecdotal. We know that the skilled trades can be a very high paying job, particularly right out of the box. But is the larger economy, is that economy being affected by this larger economy?
It is. We need people in manufacturing that have higher skill levels than we did before. The number of the career centers are working together on something called RamTech to introduce robotics and engineering into that process. We know long term there will be less people employed in manufacturing, but they will have higher skill levels, and higher skill levels command higher pay. That's what this is all about. We're talking about the choice is low skills, low pay, high skills, high pay. And we want workers with higher skills who can command higher pay.
Hmm. And the number of manufacturing jobs has continued to rise, of open manufacturing jobs has continued to rise. I guess it's probably more of a percentage is probably a better way to look at it because the raw numbers are declining.
you know, when somebody calls me from a newspaper and said, what are the fastest growing jobs? Mm-hmm. That's a percentage figure.
Right.
So if there are two people employed this year and four next year, that's only two jobs. We need to look at what are the greatest number of jobs. Most job opportunities are due to replacement, not to growth. And as we discuss people who are aging in groups, for example, welders or people who do a roofer, you know, you're not going to spend 30 years putting shingles on a roof. I hope you're not. I hope you're only going to do that for a couple years and then you become the construction manager in the construction site. So the replacement needs for existing workers retiring, existing workers who go on to other careers, existing workers who want, that replacement accounts for about two-thirds of the jobs. I always say when an Ohio State football player graduates and wants to go to the pros, they're not going to an expansion team. They are replacing an existing worker. So that's the figures that we really need to look at. And the state of Ohio has data to show that the replacement needs are tremendous in it for skilled trades.
I was going to ask you, Pagin, earlier when we were talking about why that gap in response time, why just 2 years ago when this has been building for decades, really, you can look at the numbers and we see that people are going to be retiring at a certain point in time. I was wondering how much the recession had to do with maybe some of this lag.
So I think the recession, but also I honestly believe that people started looking to Columbus City Schools for a diverse workforce. So they became, they looked at us for different reasons. I'm not sure if that's Dr. Good when he came, that a lot of people.
The superintendent.
Right. So the student, but the new change of the superintendent and the recession, I think it was just a perfect storm. And at the very same time, you had a president that was talking about workforce. You had a governor that was talking about workforce. The mayor was talking about workforce, and then the superintendent. So with all of the changes in funding, and I think everyone just kind of put their heads together and realized. So when the last 2 years is when we have made big change at Columbus City Schools in the Career Center program. But I honestly would give credit to people are looking to Columbus City Schools as a trusted person to train the workforce of the future. So looking at our diversity that we bring, as well as some of the our career centers, even though there's two, they're state-of-the-art labs that they're very hard to replicate. So outside people like Columbus State are coming in to use our welding lab, different industries, the auto industry holds different things in our labs because of our equipment.
Yeah, the headline in a U.S. Department of Labor blog from 2015 said that the Obama administration's investment in apprenticeship programs is the largest in U.S. history. Mm-hmm.
And I think you see that as well. And if you go to the trades programs, and I've visited and I work hand in hand with most of them, they have walls of pictures, just like Dr. Pinchek said, and most are white males. So all of them have approached the district to try to help fill those needs. Women, and like I said, our minority youth would be a welcome face to be on their wall. And hence the reason that we joined forces with the city to have that trades fair, which will be January 26th, to help not only Columbus City School students, but also the Central Ohio fill the needs that are existing in the trades.
And the way we recruit and train teachers has changed also, Ann. We've given up on having industrial arts teachers trained for 4 years in the university. We want experts in the field. And Pagin and Columbus and other school districts are trying to hire minority males to come in to be and females. And when they come in, they go through a program at Ohio State where they learn the skills they need to have to be a teacher. When I go to one school and she has just hired a female engineer, an African-American woman who's a great role model, and I go into a construction trades electricity program and I see an African-American male instructor, we've got this just-in-time teacher training program working with school districts. When they find them and successfully recruit the teachers in, we at Ohio State work together in a partnership with them to make sure they meet the teacher requirements.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine something like Hidden Figures, even though we were talking about mathematical geniuses in that movie, incredible role models just to show you, you know, if you want to see people who look like you, not only women, but African-Americans as well. That's been hidden for 50 years.
Mm-hmm. So we are trying to recruit a workforce that looks like our students, like Dr. Pinchuk said, and looking for industry experts to come in and to give that knowledge to the next generation. And that's truly what career and technical education is.
Some have said that the decline in apprenticeship programs in the skilled trades is a function of the weakening of the labor system and the organized labor system in the United States. As far as workforce development goes, Jim Pinchuk, is that an issue going forward?
It is always an issue. My father was a plaster and mason, and he couldn't get in the union, and he was an independent contractor, and I worked with him for years until he told me I was too lazy to work for a living. And I better. But he always told me, get a skill, get an education. And then he changed me to get a skill and an education to match those together. But that issue has always been there. How do we get people to move forward with that? It's tough. It's really tough.
But have the weakening of the labor unions created a infrastructure issue when it comes to funding and creating these apprenticeships?
Well, that's why it's important to tell people about information. For example, if you wanted to be a carpenter, you may love to work with wood. You'll watch the shows on TV, you want to be a cabinet maker, and you really want to work with wood. Well, that's great, but you need to understand that if your goal is to be in the apprenticeship program and join the Carpenters Union only works on commercial, not residential housing. And when you build commercial structure, you're not using wood. So the Carpenters Union is looking for people who will not work with wood. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other jobs that are finished carpenters. So, yes, we need to strengthen the traditional model. And people don't understand that an apprenticeship program can be just a company. It doesn't have to be associated with a union. And many of them, the best ones, are union and company combined. There are none that are just totally union. So we've got this total market out there for different types of people. I would like to see more organized labor in the process personally, but many of the jobs, the person will not go that route. But I think you're right. The weakening of organized labor over the years has had an impact.
It's interesting because you're reiterating again that issue of that disconnectedness that we really don't understand when we're talking about skilled trades what we're talking about. I mean, we bandy about this jargon, but it's what does it really mean in terms of building? What do the construction trades really need? They don't need woodworkers necessarily. They need iron workers.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Pagin, is that – I mean, can you give us just – we only have about a minute left, but just run through some of the programs that the students get to experience in Columbus City Schools.
So absolutely. There's several. I think 38 in total. But if we're talking construction, we have carpentry, electric, HVAC, construction, masonry, bricklaying, welding, landscaping, just to name a few in that particular pathway.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciate all your time.
Thanks for having us.
That's Pagin Cleary-Potts. She's Executive Director of the Columbus City Schools Career and Technical Education Curriculum. And also Jim Pinchuk, thanks to you as well.
Good to work with you, Ann.
Jim Pinchuk is a workforce development and education professor at Ohio State University. Thanks to everybody for listening today. Thanks for your questions. Thanks for your comments. Thanks for listening again. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.